episode 107 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded November 10th, 2016. Escape from reality.
Now, I know you guys know that I don't like to talk about politics. And
You hate it.
Yeah. So I know everybody's focused on the election right now and everything's going on. And maybe it seems a little silly to talk about television, but that's what we do here. So we're going to steer away from the skid, which I know is bad advice if you're driving, but it's good advice if you're podcasting.
And it's also uncharacteristic of us.
Yeah.
We usually go, we're going to go ahead and, go over here to the side and really talk about politics for a minute, and then we'll come right back into television. But we're not going to do it this week.
No.
We feel like there's plenty of other sources for that.
Yeah, and you probably know where we stand.
Yeah, and you're probably sick of it.
Yeah, so instead we're going to talk about TV. There's a lot of good TV. We haven't caught up on a lot of the fall seasons. There was a new Netflix show, so we're gonna run some of that down for you, and hopefully you can enjoy this short diversion from reality.
That's right, because hey, we're the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Les.
And we're going to talk about, well, we actually have a bunch of shows that we're going to be discussing
today. Oh, yeah.
We have The Good Place. We're going to, of course, go into some Westworld. We're going to talk a little bit about Atlanta. You guys checked out some new show called The Crown.
Yeah, The Crown on Netflix.
And you actually got to check out Stand Against Evil, correct?
I saw the first episode.
Yeah. Which you interviewed Janet Varney a few weeks ago.
I did.
We're going to put up the public post this week.
Yeah, Patreon listeners got an early look.
Yeah. So, hey, before we get into all of that, guys, usually I say, we have a little bit of house cleaning. There's nothing really there. It's more of me just kind of reminding you, hey, if you guys want, you can support us. But we got a bunch of stuff this week. We, first off, got an iTunes shout out. If you guys go over to the iTunes store or the app or whatever you use and you look up the TV Dudes, please go ahead and take a second to give us a 5-star rating and write a review. It's a great way to help out the show.
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, someone else will give them a 5-star review. It's not really that important that I go and rate. It is very important that you all go and rate. I cannot stress enough how important it is that 49% of you need to give ratings.
Randy.
Sorry. Okay, sorry. Okay. Sorry.
I don't know where that's coming from. I know exactly where that's coming from. All right. Our iTunes shout out this week comes from Peep the Mixtape with the title Don't Look Here. Says, my definitive rankings of Kanye West's discography. Number one, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Dude, I gotta agree right there. That's great. Number two, Yeezus. Number three, 808s and Heartbreak. Number four, Late Registration. Number five, The Life of Pablo. Number six, College Dropout. Seven, Cruel Summer. Eight, Graduation. And this has been my definitive ranking of Kanye West's discography. Send any disagreements to Grant.
I love it.
It's pretty much what we say you can do. You can write whatever you guys really want.
If you want to rate your favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe movies now that Doctor Strange is out, go to it.
Oh, yeah. And we'll tell you where you're wrong. But for the most part, I actually agree with this ranking. I think that's a pretty good ranking. Thank you so much, Peep the Mixtape. And once again, if you guys can go over to iTunes and give us that 5-star rating, write a review, really helps out the show. Another way you guys can help out the show is through patreon.com/TV Dudes. There, you guys can make a per episode pledge, and in exchange, you get bonus exclusive content from us, like the Janet Varney interview that you just did the other week. People got a first look at that when we were first starting Peach Cop Detectives, and I could say on top of things, people were getting early previews of that.
Now we're scrambling to get them all done before the Thursday release date.
Yeah, people don't really get that little perk anymore. But this week, we hit a milestone.
Yes, we did.
We got a bunch of people that signed up for Patreon that we have to thank here. We get to thank. Have to. It's not like it's a...
We don't have to thank, but we will because we're good people. Because
we're excited. And I want to thank, first off, Jason Murphy, Cameron Lindig, Hade Shoup, and someone named LSUEF. We know who that is. Thank you, Elliot.
Yeah.
And yeah, all of you guys, because of your contribution, we just went over the $100 an episode mark.
Yes.
Nice.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Although, now, we should be quick to announce that it is not $100 every single episode we do.
No, we are not. I mean, we're bringing in a good amount of money now.
Yes, we are.
We are covering our overhead, and like we promised, we are upgrading our studio as we speak.
I mean, I was wondering if Randy paid for the strippers or who, because, like, I didn't bring the cash, but...
the Patreon is paying for the strippers. Nice. It's wonderful.
All right.
But I notice how silky smooth your voice sounds this week, Grant.
Oh, does it?
It does.
I really hope so. I mean,
what if it sounds terrible?
Yeah, you're saying that, and then I go to the editing, I'm like, oh, shit, I didn't use this mixing board right.
But we're on a new mixing board.
We have a new mixing board. We have new mic stands now that we just put in place. As soon as we hit that $100, I went and immediately... spent all of our money. No, but we don't waste the money that you guys give us. We put it all back into the show.
No, this upgrade is great, man. We've got more inputs. We can get more guests on. It's you guys are going to benefit from this.
I hope that the improvement in quality is noted and appreciated.
Yes,
it was a bit overdue.
Yes.
And we will continue to try and make improvements and provide you guys new and exciting things as we keep going. So thank you guys so much. That means a lot to us. And then I'd also want to say that we have a quick update from Randy for Beach Cop Detectives.
Yes, we do. Well, we're coming in the home stretch here. We've got episodes 10 through 13 going to launch. And
episode 10 just came out.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, because it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah, I've been my timeline's a little off. I don't know why. And episode 11 through 13 are about to drop. And I just recorded episode 13 with Alan Sepinwall.
Ooh, the Alan Sepinwall.
Indeed. Dun, dun, dun. And that was pretty fun.
He slummed it with us.
He did. Nice. We've got Alan Sepinwall. We've also got cartoonist Dean Tripp will be on one of the episodes coming up.
Awesome.
And Jason Murphy, your friend and mine, who Jason and I had a great time. I think people are really going to like that episode.
Cool.
It's... Yeah, it's going really well, and I also am just about to do a second sort of exit interview with Ted Griffin, and finally the long-awaited Sean Ryan redo. So,
oh, man.
Nice. That's great.
Yeah, I'm so excited you locked those down.
Yep, me too, and we got a bonus 14th episode of the show coming up, too.
Oh.
Yeah, that I'm going to do with Nate Bliss, who's done all our great art for us and was also on one of the episodes, and a little guy named Grant Davis, who is my editor and producer and the wind beneath my wings.
Who are you calling little?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean, yeah.
I mean, who are you calling little? Hey. Well, yeah. Looking forward to getting to record that with you.
Yeah,
I guess
fun.
I should watch the show finally.
Well, before December 1st.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, let's move on to some listener questions. If you guys like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter, you guys can ask us questions once a week, and we will try our best to answer whatever you guys give us. First question comes to us from Kyle Volte, who says, "Hey, TV dudes, a new series by Discovery Canada just started. It'll be on Netflix in the new year, starring Jason Momoa and Alan Hawko. I don't actually know who that one is. It's about a bloody struggle to control North America and the North American fur trade in the late 18th century. It's a part of my nation's history that is often skimmed over. It's already been renewed for a second season. Are there any periods of history that you think have been woefully underutilized for a TV series?"
I got to say, the notion of the North American fur trade in the 18th century sounds really interesting to me. I'm kind of curious to check this one out. But as far as like underused, a lot of the periods that we know, like World War II has been covered over and over again.
Yeah, I just saw someone recently on a comment board talk about how it was odd to them that they had moved Wonder Woman to World War I for the upcoming movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, odd or not, I was really kind of glad when I saw that first few trailers coming out when they said that it was going to be set during the Great War and not World War II.
Yeah.
Because really, I'm good on World War II. we're covered on that now.
Yeah.
I get it. I know.
History Channel has that 24/7. And so, right now, World War I is still a more interesting time to me, but I'm sure that there are better period pieces. I kind of lump a lot of stuff into a Downton Abbey era that's probably two centuries worth of time.
I'm in the same boat. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, Downton Abbey. Everything before World War I was all the same, right? That's how everything was.
Yeah.
Once we invented guns, everything was like that. And once we invented penicillin, there was like a few things, but otherwise it's all basically the same period of time, which it's not at all. I just don't know my history at all.
Yeah. Somewhere in the 40s, the world turned color. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think we're due for a that 90s show. Yeah. See, what was the 90s like? Whoa. Remember that? We're old.
You know, the funny thing is we probably are.
Yeah.
Because 90s nostalgia. I mean, the 80s nostalgia was so huge. And it kind of is, and it's kind of trailing off right now.
That's 20 years ago.
We're probably heading into that 90s nostalgia time, so get ready for a show set in the grunge scene of Seattle, circa 1990, what, four maybe?
Singles the Series.
Yeah, Singles the Series.
Well, Les, did you have a particular time period
that you're jonesing
for?
No, not really. The period pieces aren't necessarily my thing. It's usually more the story, like... I don't have just a romanticized trappings of like, oh, if it's put in this costume with this furniture around it, I'm going to watch whatever plot happens. There's not so much a period that just locks me in.
Yeah.
Now, jumping around to a lot of different periods because you have a time machine, it's sold.
That is the secret to Les. It's not that he wants a specific period. Yeah. He wants all periods.
There you go. Jonathan Haptomichael says, hey, dudes, in case you have not been following up on The Strain.
And I haven't.
The third season ended with Zach, the son of the milk-drinking protagonist, causing a catastrophic event that made everything Carl did in The Walking Dead seem trivial. What have been some recent characters who did something so bad or so stupid that made you reconsider your opinion on other characters? Another example, the internet, is for some reason more forgiving of Ramsay Bolton after Negan smashed the heads of a boring character... and a character who should have died seasons ago.
I like that he did that without spoiling anything.
Yeah.
That's pretty well done.
I'm like, oh, that's
how many
sad.
Boring characters are on Walking Dead, exactly?
You know, it's interesting. It's an interesting question, and I feel like there should be an answer for me, but I can't think of anyone where I retroactively went, oh, I was judging that guy too harshly. I pretty much always think I was judging them harshly correctly.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, the stupid they got on Walking Dead didn't make me feel any more like, oh, maybe Laurie wasn't so bad, or who was it? Was it his wife?
Yeah.
Well, maybe she wasn't so stupid when she drove the car out and flipped it around zombies for no real reason. Maybe she was... No, I always still thought she was stupid. The more... yeah. I'm like, oh, they're all stupid. I never thought, oh, she's a genius by comparison to the rest of them. No, they're all stupid, but different degrees.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anyone in particular that I'm like, oh, you know what? Maybe I gave them a hard time. No.
Yeah.
I mean, Sons of Anarchy, with how that wrapped, nope. Everyone was just a terrible person, and the writing was continuously sloppy in that show, and it was a disappointment that dragged me all the way through it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think from either direction, like whether we're talking about a character that... suddenly does something so onerous that I go, oh man, I liked you prior and I just cannot now.
That I've run into.
That I've run into a lot, but and from the other direction, you know, a character that I was just hating on and then am suddenly forgiving more. Usually when it happens, it's not because the writing was really, really good.
Yeah.
It's in either direction. It's because that character suddenly needed to be repurposed for something on the show and they needed me to back off hating them so bad. They're somebody's girlfriend who dies, which in that case, they're probably a lesbian relationship on the show, like Tara. And suddenly they matter a whole lot more than they did 5 minutes ago. Yeah. And they get this wonderful retroactive wake that romanticizes them in the show in a way that, like, hey, weren't you in like five episodes? Because you're really friggin' important now. I'm going to get hate mail about Tara now.
Yeah, the one person, you know, speaking of that, Les, that I think of, like, what a great redemption for that character is the boyfriend from Stranger Things right at the end.
Yes.
When all of a sudden I was like, I hate this guy.
Yes.
What?
I actually said I wanted Steve to die. Is it Steve?
Steve. Yeah, yes. Right,
about halfway through. And the person I was watching with had seen two episodes ahead of me and was like, you may back off hating Steve. I'm like, all right. They didn't spoil anything for me, but I was like, okay, I kind of want to see what could possibly happen that would make me not want Steve to get hit in the face right now.
That's one of the things Stranger Things did well, is that they primed us to. He was in that role. He was the hunky guy getting away with the nerdy relationship, And even though we saw shadings of him, even leading up, it was definitely a, oh, but he's still a douche.
Oh, yeah, he's still a D-bag. At the end of it on the couch, he's still a D-bag.
From the beginning, they clearly had that in mind. That was not a last-minute decision. Yep. They were like, we're going to make you think you hate this guy. Then he's going to come through for you, and you're going to kind of like him.
Our next question comes to us from Zach McLernan, which this is new to me. I don't know if you guys were aware of this, but he says, with the revelation that Stranger Things and Parks and Rec are in the same universe, would you like to see a crossover in some form? And if so, how?
I'm going to need a citation on this information, Zach.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I did not know that.
For now, let's go with it and pretend for sure that that's true. That's what we do now. And I would like to see...
How are they in the same universe? I'm trying to think about that.
I would like to see how Andy would handle the Upside Down.
Burt Macklin would?
Burt Macklin in the Upside Down. Burt Macklin getting a job at the facility.
Yeah. Whoa, guys, what are you actually doing around here?
I would like to see how Ron Swanson would deal with Hopper if the two of them would just drink whiskey and eat meat together.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I would like to see Anne become unwitting best friends with the seemingly with the mom, with Winona Ryder's character. Like, she gets dragged to another friendship. She's all of a sudden, she's like stringing lights up everywhere, and she's like, "Oh no, let's just prepare me." She did crazier things than this all the time.
I know. I feel like that would go great. I mean, you could put Rob Lowe's character would be obviously in charge of the lab now.
Yeah.
And Ron Swanson would get that whole thing defunded.
Yeah, sure.
If you really want to know where 1 through 10 are. Leslie's going to figure that out.
Yeah.
She's got binders, folks.
She's got
binders full of women.
If you want to know how the portal got open and a monster escaped, I have one word for you. Jerry.
God damn it, Gary. Jesus, Larry. All right. Next one comes to us from Ross Brown, who says, which TV shows from this year have you not seen at all, whether of due to lack of interest or simply missing them? I don't recall anyone actually talking about American Horror Story on the show, which I feel has been one of the best seasons in a long time.
I have not seen any American Horror Story.
I've actually heard interesting things about this season, which is Roanoke, I guess.
Yeah. Yes.
And I haven't... Yeah, I lost interest a couple seasons ago, and horror has never been my thing anyway.
Yeah.
Now, I very much like American Horror Story, and I started watching it when it very first came on and went, oh my God, an anthology show. They're going to do a different one every season. And it's been uneven. It's anthology shows can be.
Yeah, sure.
And it's definitely Ryan Murphy, for good or bad. There's some weird cheeseball, gimp suit shit on there every season for no, like the hotel season is the one I'm on right now. And it's incredibly difficult for me to get through at times. There's moments where I go, okay, this is just Rob Zombie gore porn. So I'm always like a season behind on it. And yeah, AHS, I've heard Roanoke's really great, and I'm sure I'll watch it in a year when it's not something I have to pay for.
I'm actually on CW shows right now, Frequency and No Tomorrow. I keep seeing ads for them when I'm watching Flash of Supergirl. I'm like, oh, those look good. I don't have time for them. I just don't have time for those right now. I've got too many other shows to watch. So those are on my, when they show up on Netflix, I'll probably watch them, but those are probably going to go unwatched this year.
I've watched one each of those, but I haven't kept up with them. There's just not time. I watched two of Exorcist.
Oh, that's another one. Yeah.
That one actually may slip onto my list. That I'm very happy with the first two episodes of that.
It's really good. And everybody I know has told me how good the rest of it, like that it really is doing great. But yeah, it's just one of those, like, I it's not what I've been going to.
But I see fall TV tiles all over Hulu that I'm going, what show is that?
Yeah.
I don't know a soul watching that thing.
Well, let's hit our last question here. This comes from Justin Zarian, who says, hey dudes, if you had to sell an old style celebrity centered sitcom, a la Seinfeld, Ellen, Roseanne, etc., on the least funny celebrity you can think of, who would you pick and how would you try to make that show funny?
I have a twist on this question.
Oh.
Because I saw this question. I believe that each of us should pick the least funny celebrity for the other person and then they have to sell that show.
Okay. I got one for you guys.
Give me one and I'll go.
Bill Cosby.
Oh my God. What's wrong with you?
Go for it.
How would I sell a Bill Cosby? Let's say, okay. Bill Cosby comes to NBC. And he says, look, I don't know if you guys know this. There was a loophole in my contract that I have an option to renew for a new season. No matter what this, it says here, no matter what else I do, I had that written in specifically as a backdoor. You didn't know why, but I knew why. Okay. So you guys have to make this show.
Yeah.
So we're starting from that premise that they have to make this show. If they don't, Bill Cosby becomes the owner of the network.
Sure.
That's how it works. He wrote this contract. His lawyer was very smart and evil.
This show already sounds hilarious.
So that is, they have to make the show for Bill Cosby.
I feel like we knew the prerequisite here on this.
I want to be clear. They have to make this show.
Yeah.
If they don't, something terrible will happen.
Go on.
Okay, so Bill Cosby is an old man in a retirement home.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be a very popular guy. He was a well-liked doctor. He had a family practice. He had a family. He's lost everything. They don't go into it. They sort of lost, like, leave it a mystery. Something happened. He's lost everything. And he's sort of drifting in and out of his life. He doesn't actually remember who he is. But every so often, barely every episode, he picks up a new personality based on some part of his old life. And all the people in the nursing home, including the staff and all that, they remember how much they love him, and he's really lovable and funny. And then at the end, he says something racist or horrible, and they all go back to hating him again, and they lock him in his room until he develops another personality.
That's so sad.
All right, I'll give you that. I might watch that show, but only if Cosby's actually in jail. They film the whole rest of the show on a set. His cell is green. And they just green screen him in every week. So that Cosby's just in his cell with scripts.
He interacts with cartoons.
Yes. And they could. And yeah, he could be Ghost Dad the show.
Yeah. Yeah. They have to make it. That's the only reason they made this show.
All right. Well, I think you have to give someone to Les now.
I can't top that. Let's see. Who am I going to give to Les? Let's see. Les, do you have anybody? Well, I'm thinking of someone. You can give
to
Grant.
Or you want to give me someone? Yeah.
Ann Coulter.
Oh my God.
You guys are evil.
Okay. Ann Coulter works at a coffee shop where every day people come in and just completely shit on her and make fun of her and never tip her. And her life is miserable and she's the punchline of every joke. I guess. And you just watch. And she never has any good quips back. She's just there to be shit on by everyone else. Basically, just watch that recent roast.
That was hilarious.
Yes, it was.
I'll grant you.
And she's a mute. That's part of it's in the script. And they're going to drop slime on her, like Nickelodeon style, every episode. I don't know. I don't think I'd still want to watch it.
No. Is the slime acidic? Is like alien slime?
Yeah. It really hurts.
It reveals her skeleton, by which I mean her.
Yeah.
Les. Scott Baio.
Oh. Well. Dang. All right. So. damn it, there's no way to make Chachi funny again.
Go Charles in Charge, or
that's what I was just saying. Like, either I have to totally ignore who Scott Baio is as a person at this point and just say, well, we know that he can do Charles in Charge, so you just put him in a vehicle and let him do that. Only there's no way to get through that because Scott Baio is such an asshole now.
Can I give you your answer?
Go for it.
Scott Baio is in a buddy comedy with Bill Cosby. On a green screen with cartoon co-stars.
They're just always drinking buddies.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus. Hey, guys, let us know in the comments which of these three pilots gets greenlit.
Oh, God.
The Cosby one gets greenlit. You have to greenlight it. It's in his contract.
You have to. It's in his contract.
It's in the contract.
That'll be the name of the show. We swear to God it was in his contract.
So speaking of Stranger Things, like we were on the news on the question segment, Stranger Things has added two cast members for season 2. Sean Astin and Paul Reiser. I love this.
Awesome.
Because what Stranger Things was so 80s,
mm-hmm.
and these guys fit.
I mean, if you think about the 80s, who else would you guys get? Who would be your other go-to person from the 80s to try and put in this show?
I'm blank. Michael J. Fox?
The dad from Family Ties. I can't remember. Michael Gross.
Yeah.
Michael Gross.
Meredith Baxter Burney. Let's just get the Family Ties crew.
Yes.
Justine Bateman.
Yes. Honestly, I think any of these people could show up in Stranger Things as older cast members and probably be great.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't become such a cheeky, hey, look who we got from the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they did a great job with Matt Modine and, what's her name?
Winona Ryder.
That was my only concern, was that I really liked that they were the only two people I really recognized.
Yeah, I wouldn't want it to become only that.
Yeah, but now we have... I mean, Sean Astin was such a staple of the 80s. Everyone's favorite movie from the 80s, Toy Soldier.
And I just watched Encino Man again.
I love that you guys both went to obscure movies. That's amazing.
Encino Man is fantastic. Toy Soldiers.
But they mentioned in the article that Sean Astin's known for playing Samwise Gamgee, of course, and Paul Reiser was the scuzzy executive in Aliens.
That's what I was just sitting here thinking was with Stranger Things. Is Yulani Weyland Corporation? Weyland Yutani
runs the Institute.
Are they running? Are they funding this?
I could see that.
Ah, maybe they're like the two buddy exec guys.
Yes.
Like, hey, man, just make it cool or whatever. Like the guys from Community.
Or they're the guys from Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, okay, yeah, that'd be great.
All right. So the news, the story is that Ted Danson and Mary Steenburgen are returning for season 9 of Curb Your Enthusiasm. They will be series regulars. But the news is, there's going to be a series in season 9 of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I guess Larry David's back.
I love it.
Yeah, me too.
He's such a, if I come up with another idea.
Yeah.
And he waits like 6 years and then does another season.
Yep. So it's going to be alongside Jeff Garland, Susie Essman, Cheryl Hines.
Has it been 3 years JB since Smooth. The last one?
It's been like 5, I feel like. Has it only been three?
I think.
I think it's about 3, because we were discussing the other season on, you know, TV.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, it says, as executive producer David Mandel told The Hollywood Reporter, 5 years after Curb Your Enthusiasm ended, Larry could still be in Paris, but with the addition of Danson and Steenburgen, maybe it's safe to assume the show will return to Los Angeles.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm excited. And if Greg were here, he'd be talking about how excited he is to have Kurt back. It's his favorite show.
I wonder if there's any current world events that they could comment on.
I don't think so. Probably not.
They don't have anything cutting that.
Speaking of renewals.
Yeah.
The Simpsons has been renewed through season 30. 30 seasons, which sets a record, a new TV record. They have long surpassed the two shows in second place, Law & Order and Gunsmoke. And there's a great quote from Homer Simpson. Take that, Gunsmoke. You lost a race. You didn't even know you were running. The interesting thing about this is they'll have 30 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And probably aggregate, like 12 of them are good.
Yeah, go ahead.
No.
I was just thinking, someday, maybe when I'm really old, I might watch all of these episodes.
Yeah.
Probably not. I'll probably never watch... all of this.
But you know, that's kind of the great thing. It means that when you get older, there'll be new Simpsons to watch. They may still be making them.
I was thinking about this earlier with, there was a point in college where I had no, I had seen every Simpsons episode thus far.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a couch gag would happen and like, nope, seen it.
Yep.
And now there are years of Simpsons that I've not seen.
Yeah.
And now there will be years more.
I have not seen more Simpsons than I've seen at this point. I consider myself a huge Simpsons fan.
Yeah, same here. And when shows run this long, it's not just that the show can't maintain quality. Nothing's going to maintain consistent quality across.
Terriers would.
Yeah, 3 decades of Terriers would be spectacular.
That's a lie, I know.
But I also feel like I can't maintain consistent appreciation of one thing across that, like there's going to be seasons of Simpsons where they may be doing good work that isn't where I am in my life across that long, but those episodes will still exist 10 years from now when I want to go back and watch them, and not being made by people who waited 10 years and then got the band back together, but being made by the same creative team in the same move. I would rather see the Simpsons just, if somebody wants to keep putting the money behind it, which clearly people do, I'd rather see Simpsons just charge on for another decade or two and make, you know, a third of them good episodes and 2/3 of them suck. I'll decide later. Yeah. But I want them all made.
Yeah, I'm for this. I actually have watched... I was very much a Simpsons should have ended guy when they hit their 15th or 16th season.
But now it's like, and keep it going.
Yeah, well, and I watched the FX marathon when the FXX did every Simpsons ever. And I kept watching, and I discovered there's some real gems that I had completely missed. There's an episode that has become one of my favorites I rewatch every Christmas that's in, like, season, I don't know, 15, 16, 37. I don't know how many seasons it was in. But I love that episode, and I would never have watched it if they hadn't made it. So, yeah, go to it, guys. Make a billion Simpsons.
Yeah, I guess. And they will.
They will. Well,
at the end of this, at the end of this 30th season, which they are not calling the final season, 669 episodes will have been made.
Oh, man.
It's crazy. Another surprising... Well, this is a surprising renewal. Young Justice Season 3 is officially in production.
Yes.
So I guess I should watch the first two seasons because everyone's flipping out
about
this.
Yeah, you should.
It is quite good.
We've been watching this at the store every now and then. We'll put it on the TV in the store, and it's just spot watching. The action's really great, but... The story arc that it's got, it ran 1 year, and then they did a 5-year gap, and then it ran a second year, and they're both fantastic stories, tons of great characters, one of the best visions of the DC Universe we've ever seen, and the people who did it, Greg Weisman and Brandon Vietti, are returning to more. So they left us on a cliffhanger. I didn't think this was going to happen.
No, this was one of those, like, let's bring Firefly back, like, fan things that I just assumed would never, never come to fruition. Yeah, Young Justice has a great long season arc. Like, they do long story. It's wonderful.
Damn. I mean, this is 2016 starting out to be such a great year.
It is really, man, really good. Really. Look at all the good stuff that's happening.
Slam dunk. Just
hit after hit keeps coming.
Why can't I stop crying?
Joy.
All right. One last story. This one, Les found for us. It's a startup that is aiming to track ratings in the streaming age.
Oh, okay.
So it's a guy named Kevin Seal, who says they watch a lot of Netflix programming. He's a guy who lives in San Francisco, and he says that basically he's starting a startup called Symphony, which is tracking TV watching in all its forms. So that basically, instead of just looking by Nielsen's, people will be able to see, like, when people watched it, how fast they watched it, that kind of thing, which makes a lot of sense to me. Use a smartphone app. It's on the phones of more than 15,000 people right now. It's kind of like Shazam. It can detect what's playing. And
so people are putting this on their phones, and therefore he's able to have access to track third-party stuff.
You have to opt in. And the thing is, I'm kind of thinking about doing it. I know about all of you guys. Like, when you're a TV fan, like we are, and you want your shows to stay on, if I can find some way to let people know, no, I'm watching this, please make this stay on, I'm willing to give up that slight bit of privacy.
Yeah.
Well, okay, Google's already listening to my phone anyway. I was waiting for it to chirp. Already listening to me anyway, I figure. And the article caught me, or interested me, not only because of me already being worried about when I watch things only on streaming. I haven't had cable in years, and I wonder when a show goes away, like, oh crap, nobody knew I liked it.
Yeah.
Because they aren't bothering to, it's like calling landlines for surveys. Like, you're getting a dwindling amount of people if you're not tracking streaming, to me.
Yeah.
And so I thought about it from the ratings side, but also I never considered from trying to sell your content. Netflix knows how many people watch stuff on Netflix, but they're selling subscriptions, so really they don't care who watched what show necessarily as much as they just want people subscribing to watch shows.
Right.
But if you're trying to get the best asking price for your show, you would like to know if it was popular or not. Like, the people behind Stranger Things don't actually know the numbers.
Right.
Behind Stranger Things, and that I didn't realize.
And that's what probably makes Netflix and these guys nervous, is like, no, we like being the ones who have this information. We don't want the people making the shows to know what they can ask for.
Yeah, I definitely feel like there's a market pressure on that side.
And this is how we're going to get Terriers renewed, I think, right?
Yeah, totally. That's it. That's plan C.
So everyone go out and download this app and then watch a shit ton of Terriers.
Yeah, a lot of Terriers. We'll be right back.
right, guys, we have a ton of television to discuss. We are going to go in this order. We're going to talk about The Good Place. We're going to talk about Atlanta. We're going to head over and talk about The Crown, Stand Against Evil, and then, of course, we're going to end on Westworld and discuss a bunch of theories. But I'm going to hand off the mic to Randy and Les to discuss NBC's The Good Place because they have hit the mid-season finale. I'm only halfway through. So what do you guys think?
Oh, man. This show is so good. No, I loved it from the beginning.
Yeah, I really loved it from the beginning, but I wasn't sure that they had a path to keep the premise going.
Yeah.
I was really worried that it was a show that wouldn't even really be able to sustain, like The Grindr with Fred Savage and sure. Rob Lowe. Like, yeah. That was a funny show that barely made it through one full season before they stretched the premise past sustainability.
Right.
And I was worried The Good Place would be like that, and it has surprised me at almost every turn.
Well, it became like every episode, I think even since the beginning, every episode ends on sort of a cliffhanger and a, whoa, they're going to reveal that now. It's like, it's one of the things that I love in good TV is when you see someone and you're like, a bad show would spend 2 years running the string on this. Like, let it play out.
Yes.
And a good show is, as always, it's a philosophy thing where the show is like, you know what? We can always find more story. Let's burn through what we want to do right now.
In the, it's either in the pilot or the flying episode, either one or two, when she first gets the note that you don't belong here.
Yeah.
The handwritten note.
Yep.
And I really thought that that would be a Who Wrote the Note season finale.
Season long, yeah.
Ender.
Instead,
and I was, and that would have been terrible.
Yeah.
And instead they just clip right through. It's great.
Yeah.
I love the reveal because I just watched the episode with Ji Young.
Yeah.
Where it was like, how did you know that I don't belong here? And then it flashes back to her being drunk and going, I don't belong here.
Yeah.
And you don't talk, so not enough. Oh, and he's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
The show is, it's such a perfect successor to Parks and Rec.
It really is.
And it fits right in there with the humor of like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, a lot of these shows. And you see all of this ensemble cast just getting stronger and better.
It's got that Kimmy Schmidt absurdity and strength of cast where everybody knows what show they're in and everybody's in the same show. And everybody's hitting the same mark every time.
Yeah. I have to ask you guys one question.
Yes.
That's kind of important to me because I just watched that episode where,
Jean-Yu?
He's a DJ.
Yep.
His friend in the real world?
Yeah.
Do we see more of him?
I don't think we see him again.
That's an actor from that Yahoo show Other Space.
Oh,
which
okay.
was fantastic, and I love that actor so much. I was excited to see him in such a small part there, but I'm like, I hope we see more of him.
There is a familiar face from Parks and Rec who shows up in a memorable role.
Oh, really?
I don't want to give it away, but man, is he good.
Okay, well,
so
that's
good.
Right, that's right.
Well, now I know it's a he.
Yeah. Right.
But given this show, it honestly wouldn't shock me if the next episode coming back is an all John G. flashback.
Yeah. I like the flashbacks. I think they're doing a good job with showing us like little revealing bits of character. I know that TV critic Alan Sepinwall has been nervous about the flashbacks, thinking that they're going to get into Jack's tattoo territory really, really early.
So far, the show has walked an amazing line or has picked its battles really well on its core ethical questions and using the goofiness and the shiny, happy silliness, which Ted Danson just puts off in waves.
Ted Danson's amazing on this show.
The casting and everything really helps this show work. I loved Better Off Ted, and this has that same kind of whole cast energy.
Yeah, that's true.
To me.
I also, the cast as a whole, I mean, not just Kristen Bell and Ted Danson, who are great, of course, but the woman playing Tahani, Jamila Jamil, she's walks that line between being really obnoxious, one of these people who's so good, and you think, but especially when they're opening up, I started to think, oh, is she not what she appears to be? But as we go on, it seems clear she is what she appears to be. She is a very nice person who knew a lot of celebrities on Earth.
I had a moment of wondering for just a second if everyone there, if that was the premise of The Good Place,
I kind of thought so too.
Everyone there is a bad person, and no one will say anything to each other.
That's what I figured is going on.
I thought so too, but that is not what's going on.
That's not really what's going on. Like, there are some, Kristen Bell's not supposed to be there, but some of these other people really are when they show their flashbacks. And
but it's more that Ted Danson's an incompetent boo.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Well, let's talk. Actually, we finally have, and I don't want to reveal too much, but there is an explanation for why Eleanor's there. and how it happened.
Yes, I was really... going to say, because I was going to, the actress that plays real Eleanor.
Real Eleanor.
I'm right here. Fake Eleanor.
Let's talk about Darcy Carden, who plays Janet.
Yes.
I love Janet.
Yes.
I think Janet is hilarious. The bad
Janet is spectacular, too.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a great...
Or sexually inappropriate Janet.
Yes. Her trying to develop her personality was really good. There's a moment that comes up, Grant, that you will see that I don't want to reveal too much about, but the cactus stuff.
Oh, God, yes.
The cactus. We all knew that joke was going, and it was still funny as hell.
Yes, they...
You guys can talk about it all.
We're trying not to.
That to me just showed the strength of the writing and the cast delivering that joke, because I can see where the cactus bit on paper could just fail miserably and then continue to... I mean, we've all seen SNL.
Yes.
Like, see a joke just not land and then see them not land it for another 3 minutes.
Do you really have the file, or are you going to hand me a cactus?
It is not a cactus. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, at that point, you're either sold on the show or you're not. Because you're either riding along with them like, oh, God, we know where this is going. It's going to be a cactus.
This is my favorite new network show. And that's in a good season.
I've not seen People of Earth, but People of Earth looked similar to me. I like People of Earth,
but it's basic cable.
Okay.
So it doesn't count. You don't count on a network. But I will say, and we'll talk about People of Earth in a week or two. I really liked People of Earth. I watched 4 episodes and I'm pretty happy with it. We'll probably talk about that in a week or two. But... this is such a good show, and they keep doing these reveals, whether it was the Bad Place stuff or it was the real Eleanor, and every episode ends on a, wow, I can't believe that happened. I can't believe they did that. And the fact they were so willing to subvert their premise tells me that they're working at a level of confidence you can only have after having created something like, you know, first of all, working on The Office and then doing Parks and Rec and then doing Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You go in and like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, we know what we're doing here.
Yeah. Hold my beer and watch this.
Yeah. Yeah. Most interesting premise for a show of anything I watched this year, as far as just what that. Okay.
Yeah.
And yet they've managed to continually turn it up a notch. Like, as they've revealed more of the mechanics of their world, it's gotten weirder.
I will say, if there's anyone out there who did watch the first couple episodes and just didn't plug into it, you really should give it another shot. I think we're looking at one of the best comedies right now.
Awesome. I am eagerly catching up. So let's move over, though, to talk about Atlanta, because you know what? We've been saying we were going to talk about this all season long.
Yes.
And it's just been such a barrage of all this television, new stuff that we haven't even gotten to discuss. And we kept putting it on the back burner. And this show is fucking fantastic.
I am so glad I got to be here for the next episode, because I think I was on the show when the pilot aired.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
And I literally binge watched 5 episodes of Atlanta before the show today, trying to catch up, because I had just not dropped the money on it.
Yep.
And I finally was like, that's it. I'm paying for the show. And holy crap, that's a great, great show. Every episode just grooves along.
You're up to episode 6, yes. Value.
Yes.
Granted, I have seen up through episode 10, which is the jacket, which is the finale of the first season.
The show straddles the line so amazingly, just hitting all these comedic notes and then having such a real and poignant and oftentimes tragic thing happen that really shows what life is like in this community, shows this lifestyle, and it just kind of makes your jaw drop.
Although it also has a sort of surreal aspect to it.
It does. It'll do a little bit of like he says himself, Donald Glover, a Twin Peaks thing.
Yeah. Twin Peaks with rappers. Yeah, that was their pitch.
Yeah.
I've heard y'all discuss on the show before the balance between, you know, drama and sitcom, you know, like an hour long drama, half hour sitcom, whether it's, you know, length of show or how it's paced or whatever. And I don't feel like this is a drama that has some comedy elements, and I don't feel like it's a comedy that is serious, and I don't feel like it's particularly surreal. It hits this kind of perfect balance of several things that just makes it feel very real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like hanging out with friends.
Yes. Yeah.
It has that. Well, because occasional surreal things happen, or when you all realize you're laughing and the joke's not funny, they're really, maybe nobody even really said a joke.
Yeah.
It just, everything in the room built up to something funny. And this show manages to kind of hit those moments sometimes.
The head of programming for FX was on Andy Greenwald's show this week and mentioned Louis in reference to this and was talking about, you know, this kind of show doesn't exist without Louis. Like, it has to be able, this kind of show only comes about when they, when a network has learned, okay, trust our talent. And if they tell us we're doing a comedy, it's not always going to be funny, but it's always going to be entertaining. Mm-hmm. Just let them do it. There's no way a show, the first year show by a bunch of guys who haven't made that much TV should be this good. Like, Paul Simms is one of the producers. Paul Simms has done a ton of stuff in TV. Mm-hmm. And Donald Glover is not unskilled. He, of course, has done Childish Gambino is all his own creation.
Donald Glover is a savant.
He wrote for 30 Rock.
But he's got an Emmy from 30 Rock. I mean, Werewolf Bar Mitzvah.
Yeah. I mean, Donald Glover is a talented writer, but he's never run a show before.
No, and most of the people that he picked for this,
they're brand new.
It was in either the Fresh Air interview with him or Ellen interview with it, where he talked about having picked purposely people that he just liked their style, not necessarily that they had experience in television, but that he just knew we're on the same page.
Yeah, Brian Tyree Henry, who's Paperboy, mm-hmm. who came out of nowhere and is great in this.
Yes.
He's so amazing.
Yeah, because he could easily have been a one-dimensional character. He's sort of always laid back. He's always mad. He's always kind of... But there's depth to that character that we see, especially in the episodes that they really focus on.
Yeah, when he goes out walking around, when he first realizes... I guess it's an episode 2. Yeah. And they get out of jail and like the guy runs up to the door and knocks in the Batman mask and like, is this where Paperboy lives? Like, yeah. Darius just turns like, you're too hot, man. but yeah, he just goes out for a stroll.
And the little kid.
Yeah.
And she turns on a dime.
Yeah.
Cause she's like, she's mad. She's like, what are you doing here? And then she finds this Paperboy and she wants her kids to take a picture with her.
But yeah, watching that actor go through all that. And I went, wow, that's like you said, everybody on that show is a little deeper character than they necessarily need to be.
And then they did the Justin Bieber episode with the basketball game, the celebrity basketball game.
That was amazing.
Which showed the other side of his fame, which is that he's famous, but not in the way he wants to be.
Yeah.
He wants to be the guy that go up to a reporter, have her one interview, and he's not that kind of famous.
And her advice to him is so dead on and so painful.
Yeah.
You be this type of person. Yeah. That's who you are.
Yeah.
And he does. And he punches Bieber. It's great.
Yeah. But the last one that you saw... Les was Value, mm-hmm. where it's all about Van.
Yep.
It's all about his girlfriend, and that was a big swerve. Like all of a sudden, Earn isn't even in the episode.
No.
Really,
and when Van, he's barely there. Like he's holding the baby when she goes out back to call Arnold.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it Arnold? Is that his name? Yeah, Paperboy.
No. Lost it. Anyway. Yeah.
She calls him
Alfred.
Like, yeah, and he's going, as much shit as you've given me for smoking weed, like, would you just help me?
Yeah, that scene, by the way, of her, like, rinsing out straining the diapers out.
God. And,
that was the most gross and compelling bit of TV.
The whole piss test thing.
Yeah.
I think she's my favorite character on this show.
Really?
She's fantastic.
She's got her, I mean, she's the one who seems to have her life put together, but then we see the focus on her, and we see that, not really. I mean, she's struggling some of the same ways that Earn is.
The penultimate episode, which, Les, you haven't seen yet, but it
Juneteenth?
Really it examines the relationship between her and Earn. I mean, it's still a little bit mysterious how everything works out between them, where they kind of stand with each other. And I like that. It's a complex relationship.
So here's my question related to that.
Okay.
Are they married?
No.
They were just posing, pretending to be married. You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
I mean, prior to this, they've always said boyfriend and girlfriend.
Have they? Okay, I wasn't sure. Okay.
This was, as a matter of convenience, putting on airs for that.
Just tell them they're married,
And I think that I love how their relationship isn't normal by any standard I've seen on television. This is a different kind of relationship. Like, sometimes they're dating each other, sometimes they're not. Sometimes there's a little bit of jealousy. A lot of times they're just kind of leaving each other to do whatever they're going to do.
Yeah. They're co-parents, but they're not in a monogamous relationship.
Yeah. And they care about each other and they hate each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. That episode was beautiful. And I think how she like acted throughout the whole thing was just phenomenal.
You know what killed me about that episode, Grant? I don't want to get too specific because I want to ruin it for Les, but the white dude who was so into black culture.
It was a slam poetry.
And it was a different, and it wasn't the kind of guy, like, we usually see the guy who, like, you know, wants to be a rapper or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
This was, like, the academic who's too into it, who's, like, into it in the right way. Like, he's a good guy, and he's not doing anything wrong. And yet, at the same time, you're like, dude, stop.
Have you ever read David Foster Wallace's treatise on hip-hop?
No.
It's... I imagine it is exactly.
It's probably just like that, though, because this is probably that sounds. You asked me that question. I'm like, that sounds like the representation of what I was watching.
Yes, yeah. I'll loan it to you sometime. It's pretty great.
But there's also the club episode, which we talked about a little bit, I think, on TV Times 3 when I guested on that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really funny and really clever.
So the show is pretty slow. I think we were set up with this expectation. Just based on how we watch other shows on TV, that Earn is going to be this guy's manager, and we're going to spend this season watching him hustle to figure out how to get Paperboy up on the charts.
It's Nashville, but for hip hop.
Yeah, it was kind of like, oh, you're E for
right.
for drama, not Johnny Drama, whatever his name, Vince. And yeah, this Entourage, you're gonna help him make it big, and it wasn't that at all.
No.
It's more this. Slower character study of how these people in a very different hip hop community that Atlanta has built operate.
It's fascinating. It absolutely cracked me up when I think when they meet Zan.
Yeah,
the really obnoxious dude that's hashtag branding everything and just slamming Paperboy's mixtapes and everything and telling him like, hey, no, you're exploiting your shitty position in life. And rapping about selling drugs and all this, I'm exploiting you exploiting that. it's all the same game.
Yeah.
And but I love Paperboy's constant assertion when people come up to him of this of like, there is no money in this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not making money from mixtapes. I don't sell rap. Rap doesn't pay me. God, when Earn asked it, well, how do you make your money? I sell drugs. It's lucrative. And Darius's answer is lucrative. People are addicted to them.
Darius is such a great, because Darius is he's the Kramer of the show, but he's deeper than that.
The day that he the trade up episode, the day that he helps Earn trade up the sword.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see that come back in season two.
Oh, just you know that's going to work. Like, hey, I feel like that's going to work out.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he's going to pay the money for, and it's going to be random. It'll be like middle of the afternoon. He's just going to hand earn $4,000 or something.
Yeah. Which spoiler alert, we don't see anything else the rest of the first season for that.
But it really would not shock me if they pay that off a season later.
Yeah.
Me neither. If they just fire that Chekhov's gun like 8 episodes from now.
Yeah. Speaking of Chekhov's gun, the other fun thing is when he goes to the shooting range.
Oh God. Man, like, in my neighborhood the dogs are crazy.
It's such a random little bit of humor, and it's so perfectly illustrates him like being in a different culture.
And different from all sides of it. The guys that step up to his defense, he looks over and like, I didn't say all that.
Yeah, the guy who gets his, like, the streets are running with blood. Like, that was killing me.
Well, and I love that he turns around and points at the other posters in the place, and there's one that's like a suburban, like, Bob Dobbs-looking white guy that says dad. He's like, that's weirdly specific. when Paperboy's getting out of jail and they're bailing him out in the second episode, one of the perfect Darius lines that just typifies this character for me. The constant refrain of, I hate this motherfucking place. I hate this place.
Yeah.
And he says it to Darius. Paperboy's, I think it's after the cop gets the picture taken with him. You listen to Gucci Mane, I arrested him. Yay.
Yeah.
And he goes, I hate this place. And Darius goes, why? Like, it doesn't click to him that this isn't all a wonderful adventure. Like, what?
Yeah.
Why?
So, Randy, you saw the finale. I saw the finale.
Yeah.
I felt like I understand what point they were making, but that was a little bit of a weaker kind of ending for
me. Did you think so?
Well, I don't think it had that much punch. I wasn't really surprised by it, by him going into the storage locker.
It's like, okay. I don't know that we're supposed to be shocked. I just think it was sort of a period on the season. Like, this is where we're at.
Yeah, it was a little melancholy, and I was like, I don't know. I felt like there was a bit of a hype to the mystery of what was in his jacket that he needed so bad, and then I was just like,
No, but the jacket was a MacGuffin. The jacket was just a plot device to get him moving on the quest of the episode. Like, what was in there didn't matter. So I don't think we were supposed to set up to expect a big reveal.
It was the key.
Yeah, but it didn't matter what it was, because the whole point was, he lost his jacket and he had to go looking for it, and we follow him on his journey, but I don't think what was in there was actually supposed to be all that important.
Oh, really?
No.
I totally got, like, it was so crucial to him, and it was just this reveal that he is living in a storage.
No, you know, the Maltese Falcon is like it's like really important in the movie, but it's not like the big thing isn't like the Maltese Falcon. It's all about what drives people to do it and that kind of thing.
I mean, so. on any other episode, sure, but this was the season finale.
You were looking for a big answer.
Well, they've had bigger punches in every other episode.
Yeah.
Things that just made me go, whoa.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of a little taken aback by how it just went, okay.
I was totally happy with, because I thought the sort of undercutting of this thing that was looking for being just kind of a mundane thing. I liked that. And that it all turned out to be for nothing, which I think was kind of the point too.
Yeah, I guess. Either way, love this show.
It's a great show. Maybe the best new show of the season.
Maybe.
It's definitely in the running.
But we're going to go ahead and talk about a couple other new shows, starting with The Crown. What is this one? I'm not even aware of what this
so
one is.
So The Crown is a story of Queen Elizabeth, the real Queen Elizabeth. It's sort of a dramatization of her rising from the young princess to become the queen and starting in, 1945, I believe, when she...
When she marries
Prince Philip, who is played by Matt Smith. Very well, by the way. I think Matt Smith's great.
In one of the weirdest hair dudes.
Oh, he has a weird hairdo.
Seriously, he's strange.
And then Jared Harris plays her father, King George.
Absolutely kills it, as always.
You know what's funny about Jared Harris? Every time I see him, it takes me two episodes to realize where I know him from, and it's only when his credit shows up, I'm like, I know this dude. Where do I know this dude from? I don't know where I know him from, but I know him. And then the credit shows up, because I'm thinking he's like somebody else, some other British guy. And then it shows up, I'm like, oh, right, it's Jared Harris from Mad Men. Now I understand.
Yeah, and I don't associate him with, I didn't watch far enough into Mad Men. I don't associate him with that at all. He's always going to be Andy Warhol that Lily Taylor
showed. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yep. Which... He suffered in that role as Andy Warhol for having played that role like within a year of David Bowie having played it.
And
Bowie crushed it as Warhol. It was really hard to watch any other actor right then.
Yeah.
But it was like two Capotes. The Crown is... I watched the first episode of it. It is an incredibly well-done show.
Almost,
I mean, everybody on it is bringing their A game.
The production values are great.
Is really good. It's a neat story. You're watching the same king from The King's Speech.
Yeah.
Much later in his life.
Yeah.
You watch someone go through lung cancer or these doctors don't want to call it that clearly.
And Winston Churchill, who is played
Which
by...
is the reason that I don't think I'll keep watching the friggin' show. And this kills me. Played by John Lithgow.
Yeah.
And I love John Lithgow. And everybody loves John Lithgow. And nobody's allowed to say anything bad about John Lithgow without getting slapped, I don't think.
Are you about to say something bad about John Lithgow?
He looks like he's going to lead us to the Stones and the Fifth Element. Like, he looks like he's wearing some kind of Koopa shell around him or something. Like, I don't know who the fuck thought it would be a great idea to cast John Lithgow. It's like the same casting day that made us Christopher Walken in the musical Peter Pan... resulted in this. And I'm watching the whole time going, are you the only not British person on this entire show? Why did they hire anyone who had to do an accent?
Yeah.
When everyone else is like the grand acting core of England.
Yeah.
And then you just have Lithgow walking around in this fucked up stoop shoulder prosthetic.
Yeah.
I'm still laughing at your Fifth Element joke. It's so good.
It is. It looks out of place and it's weird.
It's fucking weird.
And because Winston Churchill isn't a hard. You find a stocky bald guy.
Really, you couldn't. I mean, there's not an out of work Alfred Hitchcock impersonator somewhere that you couldn't have conscripted into this shit. Like if it were just a no name actor, and I went, I don't like the guy they have as Churchill. Yeah. That'd be one thing. But I'm going, I don't like John Lithgow. Oh, you can't say that.
He's doing his level best, but. He doesn't belong in the role.
No, he's just wrong in it. Like there's no good enough he can do, and he's still going to be wrong in it.
So this show is about sort of political intrigue as the people behind the throne are watching Churchill get old, and even though he's the guy who sort of fought the war with them, they need to sort of push him out so that they can gain power. And a young queen who's dealing with becoming queen, and a husband who does not want the same things out of life that she does. It's a very interesting show. The second episode, which is I've seen up through the second episode, they fly into Africa and they go basically on safari, and it's shot beautifully. They do some really cool stuff. And it's all really well done, and I don't care to watch the rest of it.
It sounds boring from what you guys are describing.
It is, and that's the thing. It is boring, and at the same time, it's so well made. I'm like, this is good. It should be compelling TV, and I know for some it will be.
Yeah, there's enough I like about it that I find myself like considering watching more of it, and then I remember the things that I despised about it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to sit through it again.
My bigger issue is there's too much else on. This is fine, but it goes in that same place Narcos does for me, which I watched like two episodes of Narcos, and I'm like, I like this show, but if I don't watch it, it will have zero impact on my life.
If I had been hooked on Downton Abbey, I would probably be all over this show.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're genre people.
This is just not my genre. Yeah.
Not my thing.
Like I said, unless at the end of this episode, when you guys solve this problem, you're going to bug out and go to the Wild West. or Rome or something, then call me. We'll do that.
So, okay, let's move on then to Stand Against Evil. This is on IFC, I believe?
IFC, yep.
And this is basically Ash versus the
John McGinley versus the Evil Dead.
Yeah. Well, it's created by Dana Gould, who has quite a pedigree. He did a lot of Seinfeld stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars John C. McGinley as the sheriff of the Stanley Miller of this town.
I swear, I was just saying, I really want to see him lead up a drama. I think he'd be a great lead in a
drama. The star of Car 54, Where Are You?
But he's in a comedy.
He's in a comedy. He's playing the John C. McGinley type. He's playing the irascible sheriff who just quit because his wife died. He is the first sheriff to not be murdered in this town because this town had a witch problem. And they had a sheriff back in like the witch burning times, Salem's times, who like burned like 50 or something witches, like a ton of, he basically like wiped out all the witches in town, and they put a curse on the sheriff. Mm-hmm. So the sheriff has died in horrible ways throughout time. And Stanley Miller has survived. His wife has died. And he has a violent outburst at the funeral where this woman is sort of like glaring at him and laughing at him. And she looks like she's an evil witch. And so he goes and bashes her head into the casket and starts fighting her. And in fact, she seems to be just an old woman who he attacked. So he has to retire. And they bring in Janet Varney to be the new sheriff, who is she's a single mom. She has her deputy, Leon Drinkwater, which great name.
That's a great name.
Who is basically he's like, I just want to be the deputy. He's in there because of his dad, I think, or something. And he's like, I want to be the deputy because the sheriff dies. And very quickly we find out that the witch was in fact a witch. She kidnaps
the old lady?
Yeah. She kidnaps Janet Varney. She's gonna burn her at the stake. And we discover that the reason that Stan was alive was because his wife was also a witch and was protecting him, basically.
Aww.
And so now he's sort of dragged out of retirement to help this new sheriff against this witch. And it's going to lead into a variety. The second episode features, I think, a goat man. I have not watched it yet. This was really funny, I thought.
All the reviews I'd seen of it so far seemed pretty positive. And that basically, if Ash versus the Evil Dead weren't already on the air, this would be getting a lot more press.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. Here's the thing. I like Ash vs. Evil Dead, but it is like, it's knowingly tongue-in-cheek. And this one, it's similar, but it's got a slightly more comedic vibe, whereas Ash vs. Evil Dead has a little more of a gore vibe to it. I mean, that's Sam Raimi. That's his thing. And so if you like Ash vs. Evil Dead, but you're like, maybe less gore and more jokes.
I love John C. McGinley.
Yeah, like, he's
just
great
funny
here.
To me.
I think Janet Varney does a great job, too. I think she's really funny and winning here. And I love her on You're the Worst. Well, and this is a different performance.
And you got to interview her.
I did. And we talked about this a little bit.
Yeah. And how did that go?
It went great. Yeah. She's a really fun interview. And we talked about quite a bit of stuff. And that interview will be up soon.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll probably post it alongside this.
Anyway, this is similar to my reaction to Dirk Gently. I expect to watch one episode and be like, okay, this is good. I don't have time for it. And instead, it's going to go in the regular rotation. I caught up on Dirk Gently last two episodes, and I'm still very much enjoying it. And I'm sure I'll be keeping up with this one.
Well, let's go ahead and move into some Westworld talk.
Yeah.
We didn't actually talk about this last week because, you know what? We recorded a two-hour episode with
those comedies,
guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a ton of fun. But I thought we should probably cut Westworld because I don't think there's going to be time for it. And you know what, Les? You have caught up with Westworld.
Yes.
And I'd like you to lead off. What do you think?
I absolutely adore Westworld so far. I think I can say it is my favorite thing on television right now. in terms of all cylinders. Production design, yeah. Acting, the casting, I like where it's going. I like how it's getting there. It feels like a sci-fi version of watching Hannibal, where I just went, wow, every single person showed up to work today on fire.
That is an interesting comparison because, yeah, I can totally see that. It's got that same beautiful...
This feels better than television should look.
Yeah, yeah, I can totally see that.
So we are at the episode... Wait, this most recent episode...
Episode 6, The Adversary.
The Adversary. So we got to see... What's his name?
Teddy and the Man in Black.
Mm-hmm. Teddy and the Man in Black. And there's something more to Teddy.
Yeah.
That we didn't really expect here.
I love the Gatling gun, I gotta say.
Yeah.
He goes on a murder spree, and it turns out he's the bigger bad guy?
Now.
Like, who was killing everyone in the town?
Yeah, but they probably just uploaded that to him the night before.
That's recent. Yeah. Teddy's backstory just changed.
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Oh, yeah. I think they shifted him.
You know, he suddenly remembers Wyatt when Ford's, he uploads a whole new one. We give you an origin story.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's when Teddy's violence ratchets so far up.
Yeah.
His badassness ratchets so far up.
Yeah, because
I don't think he's supposed to remember Dolores to the degree he does still.
No, I don't think he's supposed to either. I think she's supposed to be out of his story. And Ed Harris, he's the Man in Black, is like, what just happened?
So what are your thoughts on Ed Harris then? Is he, like a lot of people are speculating, just a super nerdy gamer who wants to, you know, use his GamePro magazine to get that last level?
I think so.
Yes and no. I don't feel like he's a robot. Don't feel like he's not Arnold. He's not, like, I don't feel like he's any of the crazier fan theories.
Arnold's in the center of the maze. Yeah. I'm on record. Yeah. He's in the center of the maze.
But I do feel like he is an he said he'd been coming there like 30 years or something like that. Like, I do feel like he is an old school, been in the park for a long time and insanely rich.
Yeah.
But I don't just feel like he's an old gamer. I feel like he was there so early on that he's grandfathered in.
Wait a minute.
Do you think he's enlightened in some way?
No, he's Jimmy Simpson, right? He's gotta be. He's gotta be Will.
I didn't think about that, but
he's gotta be.
Cause I feel like he, has been playing long enough, he's got whatever he wants, he's got carte blanche, but I kind of feel like he's one of the guys that has the AOL CD of Westworld.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
that's
he's
what it
so,
is. Yeah.
He's such an early adopter that at this point, he knew Arnold, like, because he talks to Ford about, and when Arnold decided he was going to end it all and take the whole park down, and he would have if not for me.
Yeah, see, I think that's all going on in the flashbacks, in the separate timeline. I think we're going to see Arnold is the one who causes the big thing.
So do you think that... Like, I saw something where when Bernard goes down into the basement to sneak onto the old computer to check on the files and find, like, all those anomalies, I guess, that you see the old school logo for Westworld,
mm-hmm.
and that was the logo that we see when Jimmy Simpson gets on the train and goes into town.
Yes.
So he's in the past.
Yeah.
Yes.
And therefore, that was kind of one of those clues.
It's such a beautiful trick.
Yeah.
To forget that the robots don't have to age.
Yeah.
And so you can be 30 years in the past with a different set of newcomer actors.
Yeah.
And it doesn't click that you've changed time.
Yeah.
So you think that, because we see the map again in Jimmy Simpson's time. Like, he goes to, there's the fucking coffin or whatever.
Yeah.
It's got it whittled on there. So you think that's like the first time he saw it and stuck in his brain, hey, there's a map
that I
need to figure out what that is.
Yeah, I think
so. And later he's like, oh, I bet if I cut off someone's head, I'll find it.
I feel like after 3 decades of solving every other Easter egg and finding every coin and star in the entire park, I think that slowly over the year, maybe he's every once in a while seen a hint at that and then finally gone, okay, I've run out of all others.
Yeah, let's do the final quest.
I do love that he can still be surprised and how much joy it clearly brings Harris when Teddy does something that, like, wait, that wasn't in you yesterday.
Yeah.
Whoa, what was that? I mean, that makes a lot of sense given that he started off begrudgingly going to the park, not really liking anything that it represents, not liking the evil that it brings out in people, that he goes full on into raping and pillaging?
Well, and decides what it really needs.
Well, that's because in the previous episode, we saw him finally kill someone.
He killed someone.
We saw him start to realize, oh, this isn't as real as I thought it was. And I think he may slowly go a little crazy, but also sort of realize that you know, my brother-in-law was a dick, but he's kind of right. Like, this is all fiction.
Well, and they have, whatever they do outside the park, they have investment in the park.
Yeah.
Like, they have stake in, they're shareholders to this thing somehow.
Well, when the guy walks by the
but Man I don't know
Black
what they do.
And, when the guy walks by Man in Black, and not in this episode, the previous one, who mentions his, like, you know, your foundation saved my life. And he's like, look, I'm here to play a game, man. Don't talk to me about that right here. Yeah. I think that this is where Jimmy Simpson of the future goes to escape.
Well, what do you make of the confrontation between Ford and the Man in Black at the bar then?
They're both, he's known him forever because he was one of the, okay, Ford is a guy who needed someone to come in and save the park after the incident. And Which or old, after they were losing money or something. And
Jimmy Simpson takes over the company from his brother-in-law and he's
yes.
loaded.
Yes. Well, that's what happened. He's buying into the company. I think his brother-in-law is not going to survive his trip into Westworld. I think that's part of the incident. And then Jimmy Simpson, because he's marrying into the family, becomes a bigger member of that company. And so he's the guy who basically saved Westworld. But Ford doesn't like him because Ford didn't want Westworld to go in the direction he wants it to go, like more commercial, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I could see Jimmy Simpson's character being the Arnold that is okay with Westworld being the park in order to get to the larger goals of Westworld, which we don't really know yet.
Right.
But where Arnold clearly hit a point where he went, I don't want this at all.
Yeah.
And tried to stop it. And this is the tight plotting of Westworld. Like this to me is the brilliance of Westworld. And I'm sure it's why people think, that it's simple piling on of mystery upon mystery upon mystery.
Right.
And that it's never going to solve anything. There are multiple groups happening in this show where you have the QA people and the Danish woman.
Maeve.
You have the guys with Maeve. That are doing that thing. But I was thinking, like, you've got the corporate people, like the I can't remember her name, the Danish woman that smokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's head of QA.
Mm-hmm.
She has her goals and her ass to watch and her corporate thing.
Yep.
And there's stuff slipping through the cracks, and I feel like some of that's probably purposeful. Like, she's got an agenda.
Yeah.
And the corporation has an agenda behind her.
And Ford has an agenda. Arnold has an agenda.
Ford has an agenda. Arnold had an agenda, and whatever running systems he's left going, if he's not still actually alive, are still fulfilling all his stuff.
Arnold has an agenda because when Ford goes to talk to the kid, and the kid killed the dog, the kid sort
Arnold's
of indicates
voice,
that Arnold... Yeah, Arnold... Yeah, either that's programming left, or Arnold's still alive and still mucking with things.
And somebody's still changing behaviors in Maeve. But I feel like each of these groups having their own agenda, and none of them have stopped and explained their goal.
Right, yeah.
So it seems insanely confusing because there's no group giving you real answers. Nobody has all...
Right.
Like, nobody really knows what all is going on. Everybody's doing their own little plan.
But there's enough of a straightforward plot in each episode.
Yeah.
That
yes.
It doesn't bog you down. You can still focus on that and, like, oh, there's these other mysteries to the side. Very much in line with Lost, which I know some people compare it to in both positive and negative ways.
Yeah, yeah.
This hasn't skipped around nearly as like, this hasn't set up the hatch and then waited an episode to tell me about the hatch or something like that. Yeah, you know, like anything like that. Like, when Maeve is trying to talk to the behaviors guy or the guy that's wanting to become a behaviors guy and get and mess with all of her programming, that episode ends. And then with her, you know, we need to talk, and it picks up almost immediately.
Yeah. Same thing.
And this is, you know, the luxury of having the 10 episode HBO format.
Mm-hmm.
You don't dawdle around. You don't have a season 2 of Lost where you have to keep it going for 22 episodes.
Yeah, I don't feel strung along.
Did Grant just say something mildly negative about Lost?
Mildly. I like the most of the things.
He liked hanging out with them for 22 episodes.
I was just saying, that would have been like me saying, I don't know, I don't like this episode of Terrier so much.
I know which episode you're talking about.
No, there isn't one.
But, yeah, I think that they get to keep the pacing really tight, and they get to just keep pushing stuff really quickly each episode, because it's an expensive
endeavor.
So
do we think...
Don't dawdle.
The reason I'm about to say this is because when they go to adjust Maeve's parameters,
yes,
and she wants to up her intelligence, and she wants it, and she goes ahead and has them do a bunch of things, but when they get in there, somebody goes, someone's already mucking with all of this, and not... And clearly not in a we tweak the hosts for different park stuff, but like someone with way more super user power than me.
Somebody
is already doing this.
Somebody gave her this consciousness.
Yes. Yes.
Somebody gave her this consciousness.
Do you think it's Bernard?
No, I think it's Arnold.
Well, and Arnold or whoever are the things that, like, anytime I see a host do something different than the other hosts in the park and you start to think, they're waking up.
Yeah.
Are they waking up or is somebody tweaking them to look different? I mean, what's the difference between me making one robot seem way more awake and intelligent?
Right. It's the Turing test thing.
Yeah, the Turing test thing. I don't actually know that any robots yet on the show are actually fully...
I think Arnold has actually been tweaking all of them to a point where they become conscious. Like, he's trying to create art.
I don't think there is an Arnold.
Interesting. Okay.
I think it was bizarre that exchange with Bernard and Ford, where Ford mentions Arnold all of a sudden, and Bernard's never heard of him, despite having worked there that long. And then all we're hearing is about Arnold nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
I think Arnold is a scapegoat.
I think Arnold's an AI that Ford built early on, and Arnold and Ford built the park.
Maybe.
Bernard's a robot as well?
Well, I don't know that Bernard, but I think Arnold will end up having never been human and been a pure AI, which would explain some of Arnold's inappropriate things like building your family for you and thinking that it's sweet.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing, because if Arnold was that, and Arnold failed, and they put him down, then him creating Bernard to be his replacement, but in a more controlled way, makes a lot of sense.
Or if Arnold thought, okay, if Arnold's a sentient AI and wants to make other robots wake up, and discovers that instead you've made a rape park, and decides that I'm going to crash all of it, I'll make all the robots kill all the hosts, bring it.
You know, my favorite thing about Maeve, by the way, when they're showing her like her stats and stuff. As an old school RPG guy who sees all the RPG stuff in here, I love the idea of being able to get to get into their character sheet and go, no, I don't want to be bad at dexterity. I want to be good at that. You know what? 18's in all of them. I love the idea of being able to hack yourself.
Yeah.
That's such, and they know she has the potential to be smarter than everyone there because they have deliberately crippled her brain. So once they give her access, remove those parameters, what's going to happen?
I thought it was interesting that she knows how to play into their desires, and it wasn't so much of her threatening them at a certain point, so much as you guys want to see what happens as well when you guys up this.
For me.
You guys are in a caste system, basically, in this business, and you will never move beyond that unless you do something crazy like this shit and you learn from it. And I'm giving you guys a chance to play God with me right here. Let's do it. And that is such a better motivation than they do it just out of fear.
Yes. Yeah. I thought they did a beautiful job of pairing up Maeve with two guys so that you could have this parallel of them both being trapped in their stupid level in life.
Yeah.
In a different manner.
Yeah.
Obviously. But
one's
still
curious
trapped
and ambitious, and the other's a little bit deranged and sadistic. And both of them, I totally understood at a certain point why they would be like, fuck it.
But also what I think Les is saying, though, is also that these human techs are stuck in their own loops in the same way that Maeve is, really.
Yeah. I mean, not because they are actually programmed, but because they're societal programmed. Like, there's societal behaviors that you can and can't do.
Right.
But then there's also just, they'll get fired. I mean, it doesn't seem quite Brave New World like Delta Cast, but they are definitely, you're a butcher.
They don't want to lose
those
jobs.
People are smart coders. They make robots work. You cut bullets out of things. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, accept your lot.
Yeah.
And I like that nobody's accepting their lot. I thought it was a really nice narrative thing to pair a human and a robot character and then have them kind of both at the same time get to realize that they're both in a similar situation.
Now, another question I have for you guys based on this episode. Lee, the writer, he must be a fantastic fucking writer, right? Because I don't know about you guys, but I think if I went and peed all over my my boss's super display in front of the corporate
execs. Director of narrative.
Yeah.
So he's got writers under him, yeah. I would imagine. Like,
how does this guy not get fired? He's been an asshole every time we've ever seen him.
That crossed the line of, like, how has security not dragged your stupid drunk ass out the building yet?
Well, he started peeing, and then he got busted. I feel like that was the end for him.
No, I don't think so. I think Charlotte likes him. The new girl from the board, I think she likes him. But I don't know what exactly it is. I think something... We haven't seen this guy's true...
He's been too obnoxious the entire time. From the 15 F-bombs in like an eight-word sentence.
He's not an appealing character.
No.
They've written him.
But he has to be useful somehow. Yeah.
Well, I feel like if their intention is to get rid of Ford because they want to move this park in a completely different direction... They need someone with what the skills that, unfortunately, this guy has.
Yeah.
And they, for the time being, would still need him.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He should be gone.
I'm amused by Lee. I always enjoy watching him because he's such an asshole.
And I have endless mechanics questions about the park, but I'm really glad that they've not stopped and answered them. Because I don't need to know them.
Yeah, me too.
I don't need to know how the guns work.
About, you know, how they make, give them the invulnerability, how that all works. I'm really curious.
Why isn't it VR? I mean, and I feel like the reason it's not VR lends itself to why this is not a theme park, really.
Yeah.
This is a theme park funding mechanism for a different experiment.
It's ground testing for robots for other uses.
Yeah, this is either the island... In a Ewan McGregor organ harvesting sense,
right,
or something along the, like there's some other,
yeah, aspects. Is it simply that it's a park, or yeah,
is there something much deeper? Yeah,
because
I think it's one thing to the saps that are paying money to come there, and it's another thing to the folks that work there that think they're working at a park, But then I think that there are several purposes to this.
Well, and we know that from the first episode.
Yeah.
Because Ford and Teresa had that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this show continues to blow our minds. What is this, episode six?
Episode six. We got four more.
This is one of the maybe the happiest I've been with since the Mr. Robot's first season. Just absolutely shocked me.
Yeah.
And episode after episode of, oh my God, I have to call someone else and tell them to watch this.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And we'll be talking about it next week. I guarantee it.
Yep.
We can't stop. All right, let's go ahead and cut it off there. We want to say, once again, thank you to all the people that signed up on Patreon that are supporting us. We hope that you guys are enjoying the exclusive content that we are delivering each week. And because of you, we are trying to make more improvements and make things better here. Thank you so much. It's awesome that you guys have come through for us like that. And we want to thank everyone for tuning in this week. Until next week.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.